Mr. Pryor, beat reel four. We've been talking about the effect of the winter on the vehicles on the site. What about life itself? Were you living in tents at that time?
At the beginning, yes. Yes.
And how did you cope with the heavy snowfalls of that winter when out in the wilds, in effect?
Well, I can only speak to where I was, but I do know of others that had rations dropped by parachute. Those would be the ones that was out on Brigham Rocks area. The other side of, where is it now? Harrogate, is it? I'm forgetting. Brimham Rocks, anyway. Barren area. Yeah, they were getting it pretty rough. Others, in fields, they managed, though, to keep pathways clear to the roads. But they start to issue paraffin heaters for the tents, you know, the small, you might call them greenhouse heaters with a handle to carry. Just, we were getting heaters by paraffin for the tents. But that didn't last long because the wooden huts started to come on the scene and they had the cork stove. So, of course, when the wooden huts come, things was 100% better.
Keeping fit, did you have to do PT as a morning exercise?
Yes, about half an hour's PT on a morning. One of the staff would have had one of the detachment would have had instructions on PT, and he was the PT instructor. Yeah, we used to do it every morning. Half an hour, and then a run round the site.
Can you take me through a typical day, a working day for you, from Reveille onwards?
Yes.
What time would Reveille be?
Oh, up at six. I mean, we weren't sort of to a stipulated Reveille like you would be in permanent barracks, because we could have been up during the night till the early hours of the morning. See, that was the problem. But when we're up for breakfast, we'll see. Whatever the Reveille was, would be up for breakfast. And after breakfast and things cleared away, we'd half an hour's PT, physical training. And then the day starts. And if there was no calls from the sites for the vehicles, if there was no calls for anything wrong with the vehicles, well, I just stayed at HQ. And sort of the cars and the vehicles that was there, like the officers' cars and the utility trucks, because then, as I mentioned, the officers' cars and civilian lorries were all impressed at the very beginning. And actually, I had a lorry to myself, belonged to Garnsworthy, removal people of Sunderland. Lovely wagon it was and all. But I would do the maintenance on that, obviously, and the others, and of course there was a generator on the site, as I explained. We were well off in that farm place. Luxury. You made it yourselves. If you didn't, you could suffer. Well, I must admit, we didn't at Nunnick, because we had everything. Coal fires, spring beds in the barn. No, that was the start. But if there was a call from one of the sites, well, then I would bag of tools in and away. And of course you had to be armed when you were travelling around like that. Well, I had the Shotley Enfield rifle, but it was a 2.2, not a 303, it was a 2.2. And my mate and I, we could be travelling along the roads and then, whoa, a pheasant in the field. And of course, jump and drop, and you drive away. You pick it up on the way back. Because if you stop and run, people could have seen, hearing the shot and then going across the field and picking it up. But we picked these up. Rabbits, hares, pheasants, picked them up on the way back. I did send two home, one to her mum and one to my mum.
And you would get to wherever you did, yes, and do your work, of course, and yes, then presumably return to headquarters again.
To headquarters, yes. The officer, he may have business down at regimental headquarters, which was Rip and Race Course. They took that over. And of course, if you go, officers do, there's always
drinking.
Yeah. When I want you to come with me. And that was for to drive the thing back, because I knew he'd be slightly unsteady. And those sort of things. But of course, when I was at Ribbon Racecourse, when you went into the gates, there was I would say it was a horse box, a row of them, but the first one was the guard room. And of course, I used to be sitting in there with the lads. Warm. Until he come, and then back to the site. Because to get to Nunnik from Ripon, it was all right until you left the main road, and it twists and turns, and it's narrow. It's all right if you watch what you're doing. But when you're half-cocked, you don't watch what you're doing. And we had an officer walk in one night. His car was in the field, had gone through the hedge, was in the field. Get the lorry out and go and get it out. That sort of thing's happened.
How did you have your meals? Obviously, you may have been on different sites at meal times, so presumably ate with a particular place.
If I was on a site at the proper meal time, I'd get it there. On the site, wherever I was. But under normal conditions, we had what they called concentration day, where surplus members on the site, they'd leave three on the site. The rest, if they had vehicles of their own, they'd come into headquarters. If they hadn't, I mean, they might have listed generators. Well, I would go out with the lorry and fetch them in. And they used to be at Nunnik, the troop headquarters, training concentration all day and then take them home. Knows that was. But that was more or less my day. I did have other days where Major Dixon then. When I first started, it was Colonel Iliff and Major Dixon. When I went away, of course, Colonel Iliff, I don't know what happened, whether he was promoted and went, put Major Dixon next in line. And he was a nice chap. But quite often, there would be a radio call come through for us to go down into regimental headquarters, act as chauffeur for him. I don't know why. I mean, I wasn't the only driver in the battery. But regular used to come up for me, send up.
Did you start the day with a stand to?
Stand to. Yes, sometimes, yes. When you come out, you'd stand to and check your equipment and everything. Because, I mean, during the day, the searchlight's not much use. So, it weren't a lot to do. But, yes, you did that. And then at night time, of course, if there was an alarm out, everybody was out on the site. I wasn't an active member of the detachment, but I act as stretcher bearer. The bandsmen in the regiment, they act as stretcher bearers, but they're in regimental headquarters. They're not out on the sites. They weren't then. But surplus personnel, like the batman and the dispatch rider and, the troop fitter, mechanic and fitter, electrical, they act as stretcher bearers in an emergency. Never used, thank goodness. But that used to go on, and then, as I say, if the officers were having a party night, it was made to go down in his car. But he was a nice chap.
most of the, well, the main activities would be nighttime, as you say, searchlights.
Yeah.
If there were no indications of a raid, no warnings of a raid, was that was there an opportunity to get sleep during the night? You weren't
during the night. Yeah, of course you had a sentry. You had a sentry on during the night, and you can go to bed, you can go to sleep, but you had to be in a state of 30 seconds readiness, which meant you had everything on except your gum boots, wellies, and your steel helmet. Your steel helmet was on your arm. Your gum boots was at the side of the bed. So the alarm went out of bed, didn't you, wellies and out.
What was the alarm? What did they use for the alarm?
The master beacon from headquarters. The master beacon used to come up.
That would go on?
Yeah. And in any case, we would hear sirens. We could hear sirens as well. You know.
I was going to presume the sentry would see that and he would give the alarm.
Yes, he'd just rattle the alarm on the site. But
was that an empty shell case or what kind of alarm device?
No, it was just an iron ring. Anything you'd make the noise. He might even just run a sword banging on the door of the hood. Get out, get out, get out!
Do you recall any particular night? Enemy activity in those early months?
Yes, in the early parts there was a raid on, and the lights was on, and our Major Dixon happened to be coming down the North Road night, dark, when the lights come on, and he stopped, and the searchlights illuminated Hinkle 111. Why, yeah, no. Santa Claus couldn't have given me better. He was over the moon, our regiment, our battery, what? He wanted to know which detachment it was, because the first one to catch it, you see, everyone with colours again on it. It was shot down because the night fighters were circling, because we were in the aerodrome business, you see. And apart from that, that's the only excitement we had in the approximately 1939, August to that, I would say about 15 months down that area. The other one was elsewhere.
There was a major raid, I think, in August of 1940 on the northeast coast, where the Germans took quite a hammering as it happened. But do you recall any particular activity on that night? What were you doing on that night? You went to?
I went. The regiment started to move then because, to be honest, the Germans were starting to target cathedral cities. That's what they were doing.
This was the Battle of Britain?
Yes. They were beginning to target cathedral cities. And, of course, Durham's a cathedral city. So searchlights was moved. And we moved up then to Staindrop. Three searchlights there and three at a place called Ketton Hall, which was off the North Road, just as you're coming into Darlington. On the left-hand side, you work your way round to the field, and there was three there, cluster sites. Of course, from there to Staindrop, I'd say, 10 mile, approximately. But that's nothing where searchlight beams, the big ones as well. Well, we were in Staindrop when the alarm went. This was the one you were talking about when Manor Station at Newcastle caught it. We were standing too. Everything was quiet. The spotters was out. The sound locator was on. Wasn't a thing. And without any warning, there was an aeroplane engine started up above. I found out later he'd been gliding. The tricks they were up to, he'd been gliding. But he'd glided far enough. Engine started up, but coming approaching Staindrop. So straight away, explosives! Well, it must have panicked, not realising he was straight into a searchlight raid. Because the next thing, there was two, he must have had left, come down, Staindrop. but they fell in the fields between the village and our site. And the only casualty we had was one of the spotters fell out of his chair. He said he was blown up, but I think he fell out with fright. But, I suppose the holes are still there in the field where they hit. That was the only real excitement we had on searchlights.
You were talking about the way in which searchlights were improving, and you got from individual searchlights into a cluster.
That's right.
Can you explain that?
Yes, you had three searchlights. V-shaped, one at each corner. One is the master light. That's the big one, 120 to 150. And, of course, when he hits the target, the other two, the satellites, onto it, so you've got three. Now, if he's going south from Staindrop and you've got it, he's approaching Ketton Hall, where our next site is. They come up and take him over. And that's the way they used to work. I mean, it's easy enough for an aeroplane to escape one searchlight beam, but it's not so easy to get out of three, especially if the big one disperses his beam. And, of course, you have a night fighter up above. He sorts the rest out. We weren't in a gun area.
No, you were working with the fighters.
Yes, yeah. Yes, because they don't need radio communications to tell them. They can see. As soon as the one's lit up, they know they're in the area.
So how long were you in this area, then, in total?
Staindrop area? Not very long. Not very long. I would say not a year, because radar was coming in and searchlights was going out. And the battery, or the regiment, was changing over to Beaufort's. Now all detachment personnel were drawn into headquarters, and they went off down to Buxton for gun training. But the tradesman was into headquarters, which was the golf clubhouse at Durham. I just forget the name of it at the time now. Anyway, that's where headquarters was, and we went in there. And I was transferred to 565 searchlight again. Sedgefield was the Northumberland Fusiliers. As ours was the 7th DLI, this was the Fighting 5th. They had gone over to searchlights and all. And I was transferred there, and I was round the Billingham area, doing exactly the same as what I was in the other one. But
were the crew was changing in the sense that older people were being taken out, younger men were coming in. Wasn't there a spell when some very young people came into the site?
Yes, there was. New intakes. We got our quarter. What, I would say 17, 18 year olds. Yes. We had our quarter.
So they wouldn't have had the training and the experience on searchlights that you and your compatriots had.
No, because they come straight in.
How did they settle in with the more experienced people?
They settled in all right. Well, they had to. They settled in all right. The trained men kept them in line. They soon picked it up. Needless to say, I didn't have any training to do with them, because I wasn't a detachment member. I had my own job to do, which was enough with all the transport. But they did. They settled in.
Was transport, had it improved by now? Were you getting army vehicles through?
Yes. Yes, we were. But then, 1942, that's what I say, the searchlights was going out. And then, of course, headquarters for us then was in Sedgefield. It's a housing estate on there now, but it's still got the names of the... It was Orbelisha Militia Camp. They were all over the country then. Well, that's where they were, and we went into their Sedgefield. And then notices come out, volunteers, my mate and I was reading it, volunteers wanted for ERA, engine room artificers. made some inquiries. The nearest we could get was it's for inland waterways, ships, inland waterways. Volunteer. Never again. So I was finished with searchlights.
And you said there'd be no more excitements after the one that you mentioned.
No.
Just your routine stuff day in, day out.
Yeah. I only did with one searchlight when we were at Ripon. Actually see an aeroplane, whether it was friendly or enemy, I don't know. But we were standing to, air raid warning, a moonlight night, and I just happened to be looking from where we were, would be over towards Harrogate. And this little black dot went across the moon. Of course I yelled out, "Target seen!" As normal. Anybody out there see, let out a yell, "Where?" And of course they're all round. And I shouted the direction. But then of course it just passed the moon, and they come over and say, "What?" I said, "There was an aeroplane past the moon. I spotted it." He says, a bird flaps, and see, this was a steady going. Oh, good. But it was out of our area. And that's the only one I've seen at night time.
Were there any conditions that affected the efficiency of searchlights? Weather conditions?
No, I'm thinking really.
Of cloud. Oh, no. Did
yes, if it's foggy.
Cloud on
fog and cloud, well, it's useless because the fog just breaks it up. Yes, thick fog and that. No,
and you wouldn't expect any aircraft activity then anyway.
No, but cloudy nights, if it was clear on the ground and heavy cloud up there, that doesn't matter because it's difficult to explain. An aircraft up above the clouds, he sees what they call a flick over. The shadow of an aircraft under the clouds. They can see that. And that's what they call a flick over. We can't see it on the bottom, but above it, the pilot can. So that was still okay, even if it was a cloudy night. That was still all right. But if it was fog, no use. No use.
So then you moved, you say?
Yeah, well, there was this one. Volunteers wanted engine room ERAs. That's engine room artificers. We're volunteers, and we both accepted. And I went to Paddington College of Technology. How's that? The Army took it over, you see, for training purposes. And that's where I was for 4 months, and I was on training on steam engines, compressors, things you don't have in the searchlights, and different types of engines, gas and this. Which must be having something to do with ships. Well, did the course, went through the exams, passed, returned to barracks, Woolwich. Posting came through. Why? I was posted to this some unit, Coastal Defence Battery on the mouth of the Forth. I was at ERA, because the engine room was down below. You had to go down the ladder on the side to get into it. I was an engine room artificer on the Coastal Defence. They had listed generators exactly the same, but not on the wheeled chassis. They were on concrete beds. There was three, and of course one complete wall of switches and meters and everything, because there was guns, searchlights, camp lighting, all electrical stuff necessary come from there, from where we were. The other engine room, which down below, that was only a two-cylinder engine. It was chugging away all day just for lighting, camp lighting in the units like. The last time I was up there, it was a holiday camp. And what was the guard room was the office entry into the holiday camp.
And what guns were up there on that side?
6-inch naval guns.
They're quite large, are they?
Yes. Be quite honest, I was nowhere near them. They didn't interest me. I knew where they were. They were only, from me at the other side of the road, but they were in emplacements in the cliff face. You couldn't see them. Not from where we were. No firing out over the fourth entrance. And there were searchlights was in the cliff face as well. I never saw any of them. My job was engine room.
And it was maintenance work, presumably.
It was a dead and alive place. It was nearly a mile and a half to walk from the railway station, which was called Kinocka, up the road to the camp. When I first arrived there that day with all my kit, there was a bloke at the station. I says, "Where's this here, the gun battery?" And he says, points up. He says, "That's it up." Whew! Because there's no transport, no lorries was wanted. It was a fixed unit. I had to walk it all the way with all my kit.
In the Royal Artillery?
Still Royal Artillery.
Did it have a title, this particular site?
Kincraig. They had two, Kincraigs and Kinghorn. That's where the two were. Of course, I landed at Kinghorn. That was the head of the two. And I was in the wrong place, of course, but I had to report there. I was posted to Kincraig. Railway station, train down to the Kinocka, and walk up. That was that. Oh, there's a never terrible place.
How long were you there?
1942 to 1943. I was married from then. When I was there, I was married from there. That's how I know it was 43, June 43. But anyhow, another notice has come out, volunteers wanted armoured fighting vehicle fitters. Posted it. Yes, I was accepted. Once again, away I went. It was an anti-tank unit, self-propelled 17-pounder guns. Still Royal Artillery, but it was anti-tank. And there weren't tanks, because there were open turrets. I showed you the model of the one, yeah. And I went to the Royal Artillery Mechanical Traction School at Rail. 3 months. They had twin GM diesel engines, 6-cylinder 2. Well, that was fair enough, but I knew nothing about bogies and trucks and turrets that moved and this, that and the other. And that's why I went there.
So your duties were with the motors?
Yeah.
And with all the mechanical parts of the...
The
movement of the...
Yes, the mechanical parts.
How long was your training?
3 months. 3 or 4 months. 3 or 4 months. Yeah.
And you
posted then to this anti-tank unit?
I was posted to this anti-tank unit in Beath in Ayrshire.
The back up in Scotland?
Yes, back up in Scotland on the other coast though. And
had it a name? What was the title of the unit?
245 anti-tank. That was me. It's in that book. I've got they sent a pamphlet out to all members after the war. It's 245 anti-tank unit.
What were you doing there?
The same. Fitter, mechanic, engineer, whatever. It was armoured fighting vehicle. You see, I had different denominations. I was a vehicle mechanic in the searchlights. When I went to coastal defence, I was upgraded to engine room artificer. And then when I went to this was, I was armoured fighting vehicle fitter. Or fitter, VM. FVM, fighting vehicle.